Accession number 28704, Reel 2.
So your mum came to visit?
Oh yeah, absolutely mortified, really, you know, really. It felt like crawling under something, you know, and but we had a good day in London anyway. We went up to London, it was quite handy. Mm. We didn't have proper gas masks then, we were a bit, there weren't enough, you know, proper gas masks to be issued, and I had to go around London, you know, with a civilian one, string to the little box, you know. But yeah, we had a good day in London anyway.
Were you shocked by the state the capital city was in? Were you shocked at the state the capital city was in after the Blitz?
Well, I didn't really see too much of it, to be quite honest. We kept mainly to the, you know, Downing Street and Hyde Park and that area. So that wasn't really affected at that stage. So we didn't really see much then. And even I had another visit to London at that time as well. Went up to see Scotland playing England at football. Three of us went up, and I don't think we had an official pass, but anyway, we went up, and on the way up to the Wembley Stadium, you know, on the tube, I got talking to a Scots chap who was there, and you know, he said, "Are you going up to the game?" I said, "Yeah, we're going up." He said, "Have you got tickets?" I said, "No, we don't have tickets." So he said, "Well, look," he said, "we've got two spare ones here." He said, "You can have them." He said, "What happened was, we come down here," he said, we started, you know, going around the pubs." He said, "We've lost two of them." He said, "You can have the tickets." So we had the tickets and went to the game, and then went back to camp again. But we didn't see very much of any damage, and bomb damage at all whatsoever on that. But then, as I said, I went up to Silloth on the Solway Firth, and I did my spell up there, and quite a cold winter, very heavy snow at some time. We had to go out and shovel snow off the runway in order to keep the aircraft flying. And then after that, Christmas and New Year I had there, and then I was posted to 603 Squadron, who were up at Peterhead. I had annual leave, I had 2 weeks annual leave. And when I came back to Silloth, I found that I had been posted to 603 to go overseas. So I think I got another 3 weeks on vacation leave. Yeah, so I had about 5 weeks at home altogether at home before going over up to Peterhead, actually.
So did you have much flying experience at this time?
Absolutely none whatsoever. No.
You were still on the ground?
Mm. I was still very much on the ground. I had no flying experience at all whatsoever. And
so you weren't to know whether you were going to be airsick or not at that time?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. That didn't come until... after I got back. When I went overseas, I hadn't been overseas very long, and they decided I wanted to go air crew. So I went up to Aberdeen.
So where did you go when you went overseas?
Well, we sailed from King George V Dock in Glasgow, and again, quite ironic. King George V Dock was there. Just across the water was Southern General Hospital, where my sister was nursing at that time. You know, we were within about a mile of one another, but she didn't know. Anyway, we went overseas. On the Arangi, the SS Arangi, and
with a convoy, and
yeah, mm-hmm. Convoy, and
where were you headed?
Well, I think we went down to South Africa. You see, the Med was closed off by that time, and so we had to go down towards South Africa. And the first port of call we had was Freetown, which was very warm. But
is that where all the boats come out to meet the?
Well, we went into harbour at Freetown, and there was nothing. We stayed there for, I think, refueling. And
were you a good sailor?
Good sailor, yeah. Yeah, I never. It was fairly calm, really. There wasn't any real problem.
No U-boat scares?
Sorry?
Did you have any U-boat scares?
Yeah, well, periodically the sirens would go, and you all had to go to your stations. Oh, yeah, that happened quite frequently. I don't know whether they were trial tests or what have you, but yeah, they were frequently on the journey. We always had something happen.
How did you pass your time on the boat?
Well, there was no entertainment. They tried to organise a sort of boxing tournament, but that was about it. There was no cinema. no organised entertainment at all. I mean, they just sort of sat around as a during the day, sat up on the top deck, and that was about it. There was nothing at all. Just a question of the waiting game, really.
And were you sleeping in hammocks?
Well, when we first got on the ship, and we sat at the, we get down on down the first deck down below we were on, and we all sat at the table, about 12 either side, and start wondering, well, you know, where do you sleep? You see, and so what happened was one of the sailors, you know, the Merchant Navy, came along with a hammock and said, well, I'll show you how to do this, you know, and he strung it up and said, that's how it is, you know, when you get in. Well, I certainly persevered with a hammock, but others didn't bother. All they did, they just put the hammock down on the deck and they slept in that, and that's how they got by. So, but I quite like the hammock in a way. It was a new experience, and I made the best of it. And I mean, I think that just about sums up service life. You know, make the best of it. And,
did you get a run ashore at Fremantle?
No, not at Freetown.
Not
at Freetown. Been allowed off the. I think Freetown was supposed to be a very unhealthy spot anyway. But so what happened was we came out from Freetown and went down the convoy down towards South Africa. And then one morning when we got up on the deck, everything was, the sea was empty. We were the only ship to be seen. And the only other thing, and suddenly there was an aircraft came from somewhere, I mean obviously from South Africa. So it looked, you know, indicated that we must be pretty near port. So the convoy had obviously split up for some reason or other. And we sailed into Durban. And we were about 7 days in Durban. And by a stroke of good fortune, we were downtown every day in Durban. What happened was we were again tents. And our tent was next to the senior NCOs. And one of them said to us, now look, you know, everybody has to have somebody left in the tent when you go out. So obviously, you know, one of your blokes will look after our tent at the same time as you look after ours. We know, we'll see that you're not tied down to any duties. So fair enough. So it just so happened was that because we were only around for a short time, my stint of looking after the tent didn't come around anyway. But it meant that all the rest of us were able to go down to Durban and...
Did you find it strange because there's no rationing and
they had nothing. They had. I mean, it was like a different world. I mean, you know, plenty of fruit. You know, we hadn't seen fruit. They used to take us out in route marches, you know, to kill the time, and you know, you could get fruit. It was readily available, and even if we went into the mess to eat, they had tins of jam. You know, things that you know had all been in ration and. That we had never, you know, we hadn't seen for a while actually. Yeah, the food was, you know, we thought the food was great and it was warm. Yeah, we thought, you know, and Durban was a good place to visit. The people, the hospitality there was tremendous. You know, the people really welcomed you and they were prepared to entertain you in their homes. And yeah, we were made very welcome in Durban.
How long were you there?
About 7 days.
And then?
Then we all marched out of the camp, and I thought, when I saw the marching out, I thought, can there be any more of the Air Force left in Britain, you know? I mean, absolutely massive RAF, and we obviously were sending out reinforcements. And we got onto our ship, which was the Mauritania, which was a totally different ship from the Arangi. And we had the luxury of a cabin. We were afforded a cabin. And we did some duties there. We were employed down below in the bakehouse, you know, helping to make the bread. You know, but that wasn't a bad duty because you know the people down there really looked after you, and you know, food wise and drink wise, and so it wasn't a bad duty to have actually. And so we sailed there from Durban up to Port Tufik. And we got off the ship there. We had to go onto lighters, I believe, and with all their kit and all that. Well, that was a total change.
Did you have tropical?
Yeah, kit, tropical yeah. gear. We had.
Come to get your knees brown.
Yeah, I got my knees brown. Yeah, and we had the topies.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we used to joke about that, you know, sort of Queen Victoria House. So we got up at Port Tewfik there, and we got on the train and to get to this transit camp. Anyway, we hadn't got very far out of Port Tewfik when the train stopped, and it stopped opposite a POW camp, and this is where I first saw our enemy. There were Italians there and there were Germans there, you know, the German Africa Corps. The Italians didn't bother, but the Germans came up to the wire and started, I don't know what they were shouting, and we couldn't hear what they were saying, but you know, they were making all sorts of rude gestures and going like this, and you know, obviously you know, showing, expressing their feelings, you know. Anyway, I sat there, and you know, for a moment, it took me aback. I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, at this time, you know, I hadn't really seen the Germans before, and you know, I thought, yeah, these people really do hate us. You know, they come right up to the wire, and they have all this and all that, and you know, it's something I really wasn't prepared for. And as I say, it was the first time I really realised that, yeah, the people out there really hate us, and. You know, this is what war is all about. This is it. You know, they're not the first one I've seen, and you know, that was the impact it had on me. You know, we didn't respond. I think we just sat there and really didn't know quite how, you know, to take it all in, sort of stuff.
British stiff upper lip.
Well, yeah, and then, well, yeah, we're not like this, you know. We're, we'll fight you, but we don't hate you. I don't know. Maybe that was the attitude.
Yeah.
But I had certainly, I didn't feel any animosity towards them. I don't know whether I should be saying that, but I thought, well, yeah, I don't really feel the same way as you do. Somehow, you know, maybe I've been an innocent abroad here. I haven't really realised. You know what it's all about, and I felt I don't hate these people really. I mean, it's strange thing, feeling to have. But
what sort of time was this? Beginning of 1943?
That would be 42.
Still 42, yeah.
42, because the Germans were down Alamein then.
Yes.
And I think that's why they felt very confident. Mm. I think they thought, well, they were about 90 miles away.
Mm.
And they pushed the British army right back down to the canal zone, virtually.
Mm.
And I think that's why they were very. I mean, yeah, they were arrogant, and I think this is why they felt arrogant.
Mm.
This was the time of their success.
Mm.
And that was anyway. That was my immediate reaction. You know.
Where did your train deposit you?
I mean, pardon?
Where did your train deposit you?
In the middle of a. the desert, type of thing, you know. When I say a camp, it wasn't a camp at all. No boundaries, no fences or what have you. It was just a wide open space, and it was merely stony land, etc. And again, it was intense. And that was it. The, you know, facilities were very basic.
Was there a landing strip nearby, was there? Or?
Nothing at all. You see, we had no aircraft. We were the ground crew.
Mm.
Our aircraft had gone out in one of the aircraft carriers.
Mm.
And they'd come through the Med, and I think they'd left, they'd taken off and had landed at Malta.
Mm.
So we were just the ground crew. We had nothing at all, really. And we were just in transit. So we stayed there. pardon me. We stayed there for a short time.
How did you cope with the heat?
Well, it wasn't. I found it quite acceptable. I thought it was quite. We had to wear. We were told to wear our topies. That was a must.
In the summer, or
that was the summertime.
Yes.
That would be coming on for the summer.
Mm.
We were told that we had to wear our topies to avoid. Well, sunbathing was absolutely, you know, barred. I mean, there was no question of doing that anyway. But the helmets were to protect us. But within a very short time, a day or two, the topies have been discarded. So there must have been hundreds of topies lying around somewhere.
Very good for collecting water in, aren't they?
Well, it need be. But people just discarded them, and we wore our forage caps and just turned up a shirt to keep. Anyway, we haven't been there very long, and we got the order to pack up and go. And we're on the train again. They took us up to Alexandria. And we set sail for Cyprus.
Mm.
They obviously wanted rid of us. I think we were not much use to end at that stage.
Certainly a long way around to Cyprus, isn't it?
Absolutely. And part of me went on, there was only a coaster, it wasn't a proper liner or anything like that. It was a coaster. We were, most of us were on just sitting on the deck. There was no room down below. And we arrived at Cyprus and got off in the very small hours of the morning, and we were going up to Nicosia, which was the capital. But we found that what happened was there was only one carriage on the train, and that was for reserve for officers and NCOs. The rest of us piled into the cattle trucks. So we were all standing there in the cattle trucks, you know, waiting the train going. And but the morale was good because we all started leaning over the trucks, going like moo and meh, and you know, treating it as a sort of joke, which is pretty good, you know, the small hours in the morning. And off we went, and we got to Nicosia, and we're stationed outside Nicosia. And not the commanding officer, but it was only adjutant, and complimented the men on their high morale. It's such an early hour in the morning, you know, been dumped out of the ship.
In other words, you've woken him up.
Probably disturbed his sleep in the carriage. But so we went to Nicosia, and we were in a camp outside Nicosia, this time in huts. That made a pleasant change. And but it was nothing, we didn't do anything at all, really. We were sort of odd birds in the situation. We had no real role to play. They had no aircraft there, except a few wooden ones, and a few wooden fighters dispersed round about the airfield, but that was it. But we had absolutely no role to play at all, no function whatsoever. And the time, we just really were passing the time of day there.
How long were you there?
Well, it doesn't tell me. I'm not quite sure now. I'm just looking at this.
Sorry.
Okay,
so you're in Cyprus.
We're in Cyprus, and as I said, that we weren't really doing anything. We had no functions to perform. We had no duties. We were just resting. I mean, I used to think afterwards it was very incongruous, really. I mean, we were in that situation, you know, across the water, other people were fighting for their lives and dying, and but that's just service life, you know. Mm. You only do what you're told to do, and if you anyway, we stayed there for some months, and as I say, it was mainly just hanging about, to be quite blunt about it.
Did Cyprus get attacked by the Germans?
No, absolutely nothing at all. Apparently what happened now and again was the Germans used to send over a reconnaissance aircraft. And for some reason or another, I don't know why, but that was about the only impact. I mean, the war was totally away from us. The local population, of course, were in a state of panic. I think they were expecting invasion imminent, and you know, I think there was a run in the bank, you know, for money, etc., etc. But at that stage, you know, we were, and of course we were downtown, you know, up in the evening and things like that, and you know, just, you know, making the best of it again, actually. And I went to church there, and we met up with some local residents who gave us hospitality within their home. And actually corresponded with my mother, you know, at the time. There were a couple of delightful old ladies there, really, and they made us very welcome indeed, actually. But it was at that time that I wanted to go air crew. I decided that I would go. I wanted to apply for air crew. So there was one or two others in the squadron the same way, and so we went down to the office, the admin office, and to put in our application, and announced their intention of going in for air crew. And there was one of the old vet sergeants, flight sergeant, passing by, and he said, "No, don't be so be stupid," he said, "you know, forget about it, you know, you know, you don't want to go in for that sort of business." Yeah. Anyway, we obviously ignored them, and we put in our application, and that was accepted. And I had to have a board interview. Well, the board interview consisted of the senior group captain on the island. And I had a 15 or 20 minute interview with him, And he asked me one or two questions, and he said, you know, it can get quite difficult up there, he said, and, you know, how would you acquit yourself? And I said, oh, I think I can give a pretty good account of myself, you know, I was quite confident without really knowing what was going on. Anyway, he said,
was it
okay.
That you were bored, or you just felt that you weren't actually contributing
really, no,
much?
I wasn't bored, I wasn't bored. I really wanted to, I suppose, get into the action, actually. Mm. I think that's the honest answer to that. I felt that I wanted to get into the action. No, I wasn't bored, no. I mean, it would have been very easy to have passed the time.
Take the easy option.
To take an easy option, yeah, but no, I can say honestly, I really felt I wanted to get into the action and do that. So that was it. Went forward with that and accepted, and then just waited patiently for the, you know, the wheels to turn, as it were, because it always takes time. By which time, of course, and then, but before anything really happened, we were moved from Cyprus. You know, but then a matter of hours, you know, you have to move. So we got usual business, got on the train, and got down to the dock side and got on the ship. And we were there, and we were all sent down below, and they were sitting down in the hold. And our messing arrangements were absolutely disgusting. What happened was that I think the move had been so quick that the arrangements hadn't been properly made. So what happened to us in the lower ranks, the chef, or the cook, whatever you like to call him, all he did was, there was a doorway, you know, we were all in the big hold here, like this room, and there was a doorway there. So what he did was, he set up a table in the doorway, and produced one of these enormous tins of bully beef, you know, about 28 pounds of bully beef, corned beef. And without any undue ceremony, you know, I prepared to cut that into bits and pieces. And I can't remember what the actual vegetable was, if any. But that's what they served us. It was absolutely disgusting, really. Well, it started off as a bit of a kind of joke about, you know, why don't we have some bully beef for breakfast, and can't we should have another change, let's have some bully beef for lunch, you know. And all of a sudden it escalated into a sort of anger, temper, and there was lots of shouting about the food and one thing and another. And the net result was that everybody in the hold all piled up onto the deck and started shouting, and along at the bridge there, all the senior NCOs were all ranged, you know. I think they were wondering what had happened. They never had seen anything like this before. There was a few blokes singing the red flag, you know, and generally speaking, it was a bit of a melee and a display of really, you know, fed upness and bad temper. So what happened was the adjutant who was in charge of us at that time, with no commanding officer because he'd gone with the planes, he took about half a dozen of the boys up into his own quarters, and he first of all reminded them of the seriousness of the situation, you know, you could be shot and all this sort of business. Anyway, he asked what the grievances were, and he was told that the feeding arrangements fell far short of what one would expect, actually. So what happened was, when they got across to the Palestinian coast, as it was then, they brought on fresh supplies, and the food really perked up, and we really started getting decent food, you know, for the remainder of the voyage. And
where was your destination?
Again, Alexandria. And because what happened was, we went to again to a sort of transit camp, and we were waiting on the aircraft coming in. They were going to give us aircraft by that time, and we waited there, and the planes came, the bowfighters, that was going to be the squadron planes. So it was a question of everybody getting acclimatized to having them and getting used to it, and then before we moved off. But that incident was about, it's one of these things that just happen, you know, sometimes you can push the people, you know, too far, just that little bit, you know. I think just, I mean, you've got the discipline and you have the respect, but then if something happens and they just won't take it anymore. And so the departure was totally different from the high morale of the landing. You know, unnecessary, I would have thought, really.
I've heard that story before, of the 28 pound tins of bully beef, and just that's it.
That's it, you know, I mean, and you know, you're looking at it, you're sitting there and you're looking at it, and there's that this little table here, and there's this scrappy looking cook, you know, and all he's done, he empties this big thing out. It's just this sort of just suddenly hits you, you know, this is not right. And I mean, somebody might say, well, you know, the army were perhaps worse off than we were. I'm not quite sure, but that's not the point. I mean, this was not what we should have had, what we weren't used to. And I think it was just the breaking point. And it was sitting down in a dark hold as well. And I think the combination of these factors, and it suddenly exploded, and that was that. But the situation was rectified. But did it have to really arise? I doubt it, really, myself. Anyway, we got to, as I said, we got to Egypt, and we, after a short spell, we got the aircraft and the bullfighters, and so then we had to move up up into the western desert, and we were in convoy there in trucks. I can't remember how, I mean, it certainly took days to get there, because we went right the way up to Misrata, which was really in Libya. And again, trucks, you had to sit in a truck all day, an open truck, the weather was like, talk about travelling steerage, really was something, you know. But that, again, is what you have to put up with. You have to move, and this is the way you move, and you go, and you do that. And when the rain comes, as it did, you just got to find out your own shelter. And in other words, there's a minimum, you know, that they'll do for you. You have to do it for yourself. That just about sums it up, you know. And as I say, you feel like, well, wait a minute, the army's not doing so well either. You know, can you really complain? You know, so you just make the best of it and get on with it. And anyway, we spent quite a bit of time travelling up to Misrata, and
did you get any attacks from Germans?
No, nothing at all. The Germans were well pushed back by that time. They were there were nothing happening at all. They were well pushed back, and all the way up, as I tried to explain to Margaret, when you go there, it's a kind of, you're totally isolated. You know, it's just you as a unit. Yeah. There's no civilians there. There's no towns there. It's just scrubland. I mean, to be kind of cynical about it, it's a great place to fight a war, you know, because there's nothing there you can damage, really. And all the towns like, you know, Benghazi and that, you know, were totally empty. You know, the Italian civilian population had gone off long ago. They were only too happy to get back to Italy, I feel. But the town, Benghazi, was just a big empty town, and there was nothing there at all. There was a few Arabs to see, but nothing more than that. But anyway, we went to Misrata, and we stayed there for some months. Again, you know, isolation, no one else there. It's a funny old existence, you know. You're without, you know, here in this country, you've got civilians somewhere near hand, but in that situation, you've no one there at all.
Did you have the Arabs pilfering your equipment?
Yeah, we did when we were down. Funny enough, when we were down in the canal zone, waiting to, you know, with the aircraft waiting to go up. Yeah, the Arabs. They used to come sneaking in for the evening, and if there was anything left lying there that they fancied, they would take it. We didn't take something. I don't think we really expected it. You know, I don't think we assumed that they would do that. But then we soon quite learned it. You know, if it wasn't sort of nailed to the ground, you know, you weren't looking at it, you know, they would have it. We found that that's where they were doing it. But then there were so few in the desert that wasn't a problem. The only other recollection that I thought I had about being in Egypt was that how the British, treated them. You know, we called them wogs, you know, wily oriental gentlemen. Mm. And it doesn't matter what the status of the Egyptian was, they were dismissed as wogs. You know, and I thought, well, that's a typical kind of British attitude, you know. The natives were vastly inferior, you know, to us. Didn't matter how low we were. I think, as I say, that was just the fact. I think that was a touch of the colonial empire coming out, that we were, you know, we were definitely superior to them, and they were just a bunch of natives, and, you know, that was about it. And but that was just a passing by reflection on the situation. Anyway, as I say, we're at Misrata for some months, and
Did you have planes there, or was it like Cyprus?
We had planes. We had our bullfighters there, but at one time we were the only people there. But then we were joined later on by a South African squad.
So the bullfighters, what was their role?
Well, they were Coastal Command. They were attacking the Greek islands and the shipping in the Mediterranean. That was their function. And that was at Misurata. I had my first flight in an aircraft. Because I was going air crew, I thought, can I get a...
I might not like this.
Well, I put that forward. I had to ask permission. I had to get the flight commander's permission. I got some one of my NCOs to ask him, could I go flying, not in operations, but on some of the practice flights. So permission was duly granted. And the first attempt at flying wasn't an awful good one, wasn't very auspicious really. We got in the plane where that bullfighter.